And the El Paso community is a relatively poor community with very little corporate presence. So we've learned to do with very little. We've learned to do without. And we've learned to do for ourselves.
Hi, this is Ike Evans of the Hogg Foundation for Mental Health, and you are listening to Into the Fold. The Hogg Foundation is a strategic grant maker based at the University of Texas at Austin. To learn more, visit us at hogg, that is H-O-G-G, .utexas.edu. So how do communities create mental health and well-being? What kinds of knowledge, what level of resources, and what forms of advocacy are needed to strengthen the ability of communities to promote and protect the mental health of their members? Is traditional philanthropy enough to support such work, or is it time for a new grassroots-inspired urgency to address these issues? Joining us today, visiting us from El Paso, is Richard Salcido, Executive Director of Family Services of El Paso. In 2011, Family Services received the award for advancing minority mental health by the American Psychiatric Association. He's here with us to discuss how the community of El Paso promotes and protects mental health and how that might differ from other places. Richard, thank you for joining us.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
So in my intro, I asked whether traditional philanthropy is enough to support the work of strengthening communities' ability to promote mental health, or whether a new kind of, as I put it, grassroots urgency is needed. So from your own point of view as a mental health professional, what is your answer to that question?
Well, whereas traditional philanthropy is good, there's never enough of it. And especially in a community like El Paso, where there's actually very little philanthropy. And the El Paso community is a relatively poor community with very little corporate presence. So we've learned to do with very little. We've learned to do without. And we've learned to do for ourselves. Family service, for example, our purpose in the community is to make counseling available to anybody, regardless of ability to pay. So we target our services to the poor and disadvantaged. And so with very little, we're able to support a community.
Okay. So, I mean, we're talking about what communities do to promote mental health and well-being. So I noticed on the Family Services website, just poking around, that you offer a class called Capacitar. I hope I was in the ballpark with that pronunciation there. And it's described as a method used to teach empowerment and solidarity. From personal healing and transformation, people can reach out to their families and communities to heal injustice and create a more peaceful world. So why do you think an offering like that is important?
Capacitar was developed for people that lived in third world war-torn countries where they experienced atrocities and developed PTSD and depression because of what they've gone through. And as you know, El Paso is on the border, and we have lots of clients who have experienced and lived with trauma that they experienced in their home country in Mexico. We have a lot of poverty. And as I mentioned earlier, there's little access to mental health services. So by having Capacitar, we can serve a lot more people, and we can target their needs of depression and anxiety, PTSD. It develops also a sense of community because we do it in group form. So you have a group of 10, 12 ladies, usually, who go through the process of the meditation and learning the techniques, etc. And then these women outside of the group will go out for coffee, invite each other over for dinner, and they're developing a sense of community, a sense of belonging.
Right. And, you know, it's a word that is tossed around so much, and it's one that we've been using an awful lot lately, and that is community. One thing that I personally feel is not enough appreciated is the fact that community is not a static thing that either exists or not. It's a thing that that one creates and recreates through the things that they do.
Right.
And it sounds like that capacitor, whatever else it might do, it kind of affords an opportunity to rediscover just how true that is, I would think.
Absolutely, yes.
Yeah.
Yes, yes.
And so from your point of view as an El Pasoan, Austin is the only city that I've ever lived in, really. I wasn't born here, but I've lived here for most of my life. And there are a lot of things about Austin that make it atypical for a Texas city. Mm-hmm. And there are things about what it would take to promote mental health in a city like Austin that don't necessarily apply everywhere. And so, you know, kind of seeing things through your El Paso lens, what do you see as both the biggest opportunities and biggest challenges to creating mentally healthy communities?
I think the biggest opportunity is that you find a lot of extended family in El Paso. You know, kids are growing up with their aunts and uncles and grandparents and parents. And so there's lots of family support. And I think that's our biggest strength in our community.
Yeah. And that's, again, I think in some contrast to Austin, which attracts a lot of, you know, young professionals.
Right.
Transients, we might call them. And I wouldn't think that would bubble up to the surface as much here as, mm-hmm. as in a place like El Paso, what you mm-hmm. talk about.
Right.
And so when it comes to mental health, you know, we're talking about both protective factors, you know, what communities do well, and risk factors or threats to well-being to which a community might be exposed. El Paso has the social and cultural attributes of both a large city and a border town.
Right.
And so what protective and risk factors are unique to a place like this compared to others?
Well, I believe that culture in itself is a protective factor. And we're 85% Hispanic of different acculturation levels. But that is our biggest strength, the culture that we have. And again, the culture of family, and then the sense of belonging. 85% Hispanic, and I would venture to say that 45% of that 85% speak Spanish. And so there's things that make you feel like you belong.
Yeah.
When we look at risk, I don't know if you've heard of the drug wars that are occurring in Juarez.
Yeah.
At one time, it was the deadliest city in the world.
Yeah.
And that's just a stone throws away from us. And so we see a lot of families that come to El Paso because they're fleeing the violence from the drug wars.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's part of the risk. Another part of the risk is, like, again, we're a relatively poor community. And so sometimes when you're a poor community, you have to do without. And sometimes people do without essentials like medical care and mental health care and things of that nature. Then most recently, with the current administration, we have a large undocumented population in El Paso.
Right.
I believe it's about 45,000 in our community of 850,000. And so you have a lot of people whose anxiety and fear of deportation has risen recently. And so that affects families, that affects their sense of security. And knowing what's going to happen tomorrow and what's going to happen next year, and are they going to build that border wall, and are they going to be knocking on our doors to deport us? It's especially true with relationships. And say that you have a woman in an oppressive relationship and is being abused, and she's afraid to call the police. And whereas we were always really quick to tell them at the first sign of violence, call the police, now we hesitate because the risk is true that if she goes to the police, they'll know she's undocumented, they'll know where she lives. And if ever they do enforce strong immigration deportation, they'll go find her. And so there have been incidences already that are making people fearful of deportation.
Yeah. And so, I mean, one question that comes to mind, just listening to you, is you mentioned how poor the community is. So, I mean, there must be a kind of art to communicating to people whose resources are always stretched, that mental health is not just a frill that they can afford to neglect.
Right.
Because they're worried about other necessities.
Right. Yes. 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 And so what we do is mental health is physical health.
Yeah.
You know, health is health. And so there are things that people can do to promote good health. And so I'm big on having people exercise, going for a walk, eating nutritiously, sleeping 7 to 8 hours a day, scheduling pleasurable activities,
right,
going to free public events,
yeah,
developing relationships with neighbors and friends. And so I always look at an individual and see, how can we improve this individual's quality of life? And it doesn't take money. You know, it takes being connected to the community.
Right. Now, I've always thought that civic engagement is a crucial dimension of community, and that the lack of it contributes to the kind of alienation. I mean, there's so much talk now about how lonely we are, you know, that affects mental health. And it's starting to appear that Texas cities are increasingly seen as sites of resistance to the current political climate. So if people are awakening to the importance of civic engagement, you know, what are some ways that energy can be harnessed, you know, for the sake of people's mental health and wellness? Or is there anything that you've seen that, that shows us an example of that?
Yeah. Well, I'm proud to say that in El Paso, both our sheriffs and police departments and city council and commissioner's court have all said, we're not going to do what the attorney general is asking us to do. And we're not going to violate your civic rights. And so people have reacted to that positively. And I'll give you an example. They're trying to knock down a community downtown El Paso to build a sports arena. And people that live in the community and people surrounding it are saying, hell no, this is where we live. We're not going to let you knock down our community. And they've banded together and they form human chains and they've slept there overnight. And you don't see the police out there trying to haul him off. You don't see people chastising them. You see a lot of support for this community group that's out there trying to protect their neighborhood. And so that's involvement. And that's allowing people to speak their minds. And so I think there's spillover to that, to where they're forming friendships and they're forming alliances. And I have people coming to my office asking me to sign the petition to save Duranguito. And so it's a beautiful movement.
Okay. Well, our guest, Richard Salcido, the conversation, risk factors, protective factors, strengths, threats, all of that kind of rolled into one. We're talking about the community of El Paso, and we're talking about what mental health and well-being means for that particular community. Thank you so much for joining us.
My pleasure to be here.
And that's it for this episode of the podcast. If you like what you hear, please leave us a positive review on iTunes and sign up for the podcast e-newsletter. You can find the sign-up box on the podcast landing page under the News and Resources menu on our website, hog.utexas.edu. Thanks so much for joining us.